wow, that guy needs to be somewhere.
You see him rolling in construction. It's dangerous, and he thinks he's riding dirty.
No, he's hauling ass. I'm going, like, probably faster than I ought to.
Dude, he's gonna fuck someone up.
He needs to be someplace. Recording, I'll start recording.
Yeah, I'm recording now.
You're recording now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is the... I just bumped it, so that's gonna be fun. Well, so that was a bumping sound effect, in case you're wondering what bumping sounds like.
Yeah, there's about to be a really loud seatbelt sound. Ka-chink.
Oh, you made part of that with your mouth. So, okay, I keep...
I'm sorry. You made part of it with your mouth.
I don't think that that's true.
Okay.
Okay, here's your sits on.
Juice.
Sits up juice. Brandy.
Well, cheap. This is today. Today is the first day we're trying to record off of a thing that's not Kendrick's phone.
But we're also recording on Kendrick's phone.
Yeah, just in case.
Just in case we fucked it up.
So, yeah.
Highball. Give us money. Because we're... Oh, we already did that joke.
And welcome to Sit Talk, everybody.
Welcome to Sit Talk. I have a driveway again.
Yeah, it's... there's a mass exodus from Kendrick's house happening.
I don't know if I'd say mass. They're both very skinny.
Well, that's why I said it for you.
Oh. All right, then. Glad you,
Yeah. You're welcome.
Good.
So, let's look at what we should talk about today. Is there anything, any kind of, like, quick banter we want to go for?
Oh,
I feel like you had something you wanted to say, and now
actually,
you're like,
I did.
Oh, okay.
That's full of shit. Gyms. Gyms in the new year. Blow! That's all. I mean...
What the fuck does that mean?
I mean...
Are you speaking to, like, sleeper cell agents?
No, there's a combination of, meatheads that are always there being displaced by this,
too. Oh, gyms at the new year.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were talking about, like, a guy named Jim... Yeah. In the new year and blow. And it's like, those are the three code words that you need to activate the agents.
Breakfast is signaled with a silver spoon. And then that, all of a sudden, Kyle's a sleeper agent. it's just, you know, the usual. There's the resolutioners, and they'll probably be here for another week or two before they all give up. Mm-hmm. And they're just everywhere doing things in the way. There's like a stretching area, and people lie down on the ground in front of the, like, bar where you can stretch your legs. They're just lying on the ground in front of it.
Like, I was gonna start, but then I laid down and this mat's
I think they're stretching, but I don't know. They mostly look like they're napping. But
I always was told to just, I think, wait. What I was doing was, like, plyometrics. I think that was what they're called. The HIIT exercises, high intensity training stuff.
That's a subset of plyometrics, I think, technically.
And I wouldn't really stretch a lot before. I would kind of stretch as I was getting into the exercises by going kind of slow and making sure everything's happening. But then I would roll a foam roller after.
Yeah.
And that's kind of
foam rollers are really popular right now. I don't like them, but they're very popular right now.
Well, if it doesn't hurt, you're not doing it right. That's kind of the foam roller mentality, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can see that. For me, I found that when I was doing certain lifting, just lately, my lower back's bugging me and I got to get it, like, it's okay, but I found all I got to do is if I just stretch it out right after doing some lifts, then it's fine. It just gets a little tight. So I don't know if I'm doing it. I don't think my form is too far off. I'm just a little tight. So it's like, oh, I'll just do a little stretch. Just a little stretchy poo. You know, put my foot up on the bar, stretch my lower back and my leg a little because I'm probably just tensing too much, you know? And there's a guy just lying down on the ground in front of it. It's like, no, never mind. I'm tempted to stretch over him. But I'm not enough of an asshole.
Lunge on top of him.
Yeah. I the way that guy was laying there, I could totally have done it. But I'm not prepared to put my balls that close to a stranger.
Yeah, because you never know if one of them is going to be like a snapper turtle. And then just like their inherent reaction is like, balls in my face, I better bite them. That's the only way to get out.
And that's...
They're like little nuts.
That's a risk I'm not prepared to take. But what that causes is a displacement. And then the meatheads, the usual gym rats, are even more annoying because now they're pressed into you. Because there's all the other resolutioners around, so...
There's resolutioners and rats. There's a lot of R-style words when it comes to, like, people at the gym.
There's a
lot of rigmarole happening.
Not very much rigmarole.
There's always a certain amount.
Yeah, but like, then there's the guys who go up to the weight rack, and they pick weights up off of it and stand right over it doing curls. It's like, I just want to...
Yeah, I
noticed
that,
too. I need to reach past
your
sweaty balls here.
I don't really understand it. So that's why I kind of dug doing, HIIT exercises.
Cause yeah, because you don't have to worry about anybody else.
Like, you take three or four things, and you use them for maybe 15 minutes, and then you put them back. And then you take three or four more things, and you use them for 15 minutes and put them back. And you only work out for about half an hour to 45 minutes, and, it's really nice. Because you just start sweating, you do lifting stuff. It was really cool. And if I, when I get back into working out at some point, I'm probably going to start doing that again.
That high-intensity interval stuff seems to be really popular, and it seems to be pretty effective from the stuff I've been reading. The problem is it also sucks. Like,
it's hard to do.
It's really difficult to do.
I like it, though, because it get, I don't like straight-up cardio. So when I'm doing stuff, I prefer not to just run for 45 minutes or do elliptical for, like, an hour. I much rather do something that gets my heart rate up and, you know, like, let's... It's like sprinting, but I don't have to run.
Right.
So...
And that's where I have, like, the, all the money. Wow, that guy needs to be somewhere.
You see him rolling in construction.
Is that what
he's dangerous, and he thinks he's riding dirty.
No, he's hauling ass. I'm going, like, probably faster than I ought to.
Dude, he's gonna fuck someone up.
He needs to be someplace.
So, I think that a lot of the things that we've already talked about this morning kind of feed directly into this amazing concept of the social contract.
Oh, dear.
And maybe we should discuss the social contract today. So,
so, social contract theory originated with John Locke, who's the first... Actually, no, was it Adam Smith? I don't remember. Point is, doesn't matter.
Point is it doesn't matter. Okay, so that's it. That was a really quick conversation about the social contract.
Done. Next song. With tech economics.
I'm newly familiar with this social contract idea.
Okay.
Like, it's something that people have said jokingly in the past, and I've never really given it much credit. But recently I saw, like, that comic you sent, and you kind of explained it a little bit on a previous episode, maybe, but can you elaborate on the idea of the social contract and, like, what it allows people to do and, like, what people leverage it for and, like...
Also, the social contract theory...
It's, like, a real thing.
Well, so it's kind of like the check your privilege thing. There is a real thing associated with it, but that's usually not what people are referring to.
Okay.
So
do you know about the real thing?
I know very little, a vague concept of it. It's basically that... I want to say it was Adam Smith, but I'm going with John Locke, and those are two very different people, but I was just researching it the other day, and I can't remember. I wandered too far, dug too deep and too greedily into the Wikipedias and the associated citations.
Jean-Jacques Rousseau?
Rousseau. I think someone else. Oh, he had a book called The Social Contract.
Yeah, okay.
Other people talked about The Social Contract.
All right.
The concept behind The Social Contract at its core is that there are unspoken rules that we all follow in society that aren't enforced by any laws or any governing bodies, but we all still follow them.
Yeah, so that's interesting because it's kind of similar to what, like, social contract book.
Yeah.
It says that the book argued against the idea that monarchs were divinely empowered to legislate. And yeah. So Rousseau alerts that only the people who are sovereign have all the power and all rights. So, like, power to the people, kind of.
Yep.
But that's interesting that it's been somehow...
Well, there's different aspects of it, right? Because, like, when you talk about the social contract in the sense that we're using it, I don't think it's usually referring to the justification book of monarchical power.
In both moral and political philosophy, the social contract is a theory or model originating during the Age of Enlightenment. Oh, so it's very enlightened. So that's why you can quote it all the time, right?
Sure.
The question of the origin of society and legitimacy of authority of the state over the individual. Hmm.
Okay. So that's like the whole the original theory. Right?
Okay.
And that's the part that I always struggle with the details on, obviously, because I said it wrong a minute ago.
But it's okay.
No, what I'm saying is that's like the core thing was where does the power of society come from? And I want to say that now I think about it, that probably feeds into the... some of the great big thinkers of state power and stuff.
That we accidentally bring this up in our, like, the idea of the social contract, because it's something that we, I think, both feel moderately about.
I guess I'm guilty of it, too, now, is conflating the colloquial use of it with the technical reference of it.
They're different, but they're the same. But they're, I know, for one, it feels like they may have originated from one and, like,
oh, they must have.
One of them came from
they
the other.
They must have. But I guess I'm more familiar with the colloquial one. Go figure.
And that's interesting because the idea that the state isn't sovereign over the people is cool. Like, that's the original idea. But then it got pulled into that since the people are sovereign over themselves, that there is an inherent, like, value to the rules that people make. That you don't have to communicate, but everybody knows.
Yeah, there's almost an actual, literal, intrinsic rules.
Yeah, like because we make the rules, there are the rules.
But what's funny is it's that there's rules without a maker. That's the part that's quite fascinating. Is nobody, I mean, like, who said it was important to, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. Hold the door open for somebody. No one told you that was a
it's
rule.
It's just
you
polite.
It's
like,
just a
well,
thing you do.
Who's to say, like, that being polite is something that we all agree that is
right.
good?
And I think that's a very simplistic example of things in the social contract.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, so there's things that you assume that everyone does, and then
when
you hear someone doesn't do them, or you don't do it once, and you realize it's not a huge deal, you're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I thought I was going to get burned at the stake for, like, you know, not taking my trash.
Well, it's not even necessarily that you think that. It's that you just
stake.
Do it automatically, right? Mm-hmm. And so...
Yeah.
Those are just things that you do, you know? And violating those social constructs makes people around you uncomfortable, at the very least.
Yeah, and, well, I like the idea that you can know if anybody can almost freely add things to the social contract as long as everyone else doesn't deem it as not appropriate.
I mean...
It's kind of like meme-esque.
It's subtle. It's subtle because I can say that, you know, it's clearly... It's part of the social contract for you to bring a gift to my house when you visit. It's like, that's not...
Well, like, yeah, or like bring...
I mean, that kind of
yeah,
is true, but it needs to be gold. That's not true.
Like, how sometimes... Like, the rules around gifting flowers are something that's
yeah.
kind of interesting, because you're like, you bring them sometimes. You can bring flowers for an occasion that's not romantic. You can bring them flowers for an occasion that is,
yep.
but you need to know the difference between the
and
two.
And it's different colored flowers.
Different
often
types of flowers,
yeah.
too. Different styles of giving, so like a bouquet versus a like vase of flowers.
Yep.
Like, it's just interesting because
the implications of buying someone a potted plant instead of flowers, despite them being very, very similar.
Yeah, right. Because one of them you can actually keep forever, and the other
yep.
one is
fleeting.
Like fleeting.
Like our love.
Best. Yeah. Whoa.
Whoa.
Our love, or
yeah.
like.
No, Arlov, that demon, that wisp demon. Arlov,
oh, okay.
he doesn't last very long when you summon him.
Because he's fleeting.
Because he's fleeting.
He just always kind of
yep.
extricates himself.
Yeah.
From
I think one of the other, a fine example of a way to think about the modern use of the colloquial use of the social contract is weddings.
Okay.
And you can think about all the stuff you know you're supposed to do for a wedding, at a wedding, when you're
throw
going to
rice
a wedding.
At the end, you mean? Or like,
well,
you're
like,
other stuff?
You bring a gift, you know, you're supposed to RSVP,
yeah, about that.
You don't just drift in out of nowhere, you don't leave in the middle of the ceremony, you don't talk.
Bed, yeah. Okay.
Like, you think about it, there's a lot of little rules you're following that no one...
Really said. It's
well, they may have told you, but like, what book is it from? What
see, I think there's even tiers within that, too, because some of those rules are designated around being a polite person.
And some of them are regional, too.
And,
that's a
well,
big part.
And
but.
Some of them are like, even more obscure, where it's like, you shouldn't wear white to a wedding.
Right.
And you're like, wait, that doesn't even have anything to do with being polite or
regional. No, but that's,
regional.
You could probably call that being part of the social contract.
Yeah, you no, I'm saying you could, but, like, it's almost like you're setting yourself up for failure if you don't participate in all of society's offerings all
I mean,
the time.
That's kind of how it works, yeah. I mean, that's the social contract and not the human contract.
But, like, you should always go to a wedding at least, like, 5 times. And you should always make sure you go to a funeral, like, a few times.
Well, there's authorities on this stuff you can consult, right?
I guess.
But there are authorities based off of convention, and it's like, this is the wrong way around.
Oh, God. I had typed in top news so we could do eventing, and I saw the inauguration.
You realize that probably today's not a good day to be on the internet.
But, yeah, sorry, anyway, that's another, how does that, what are the implications of the social
well,
contract in
point,
that?
Well, at this point, this would be mid-February, so the world will have ended, according to some, since Trump will open Trump Gate to Trump Hell, or Trump Fell.
Trumpful?
Trumpful.
That's the German word for
Trumpful.
Something.
Trumpful. That sounds delicious, actually. I think I would like some Trumpful. Do you want to stop by the German bakery and get some Trumpful?
No, I don't think
there's a German bakery right up here on the left. They're probably open.
Trumpful?
What
do you think that is?
I don't know, but it sounds like it would have some kind of, like, nuts in it and maybe, like, butter on it and then perhaps, like, some kind of drizzled sauce.
Drizzled sauce. It's not quite sweet, but it's not quite savory. You're just, like, it's just kind of in the middle of, like, of taste.
Some people like it, but most people hate it.
But the people who like it really like it.
Mostly because the other people hate it so much.
That is the
very fluffy on top. In places. So anyway, moving swiftly forward.
I'm trying to think of more anything else with the social contract that I want to.
Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff. Like, there's there's places where violating the social contract has differing levels of implication, right? Like, getting up and walking away.
So we're differentiating breaking the law and violating the social contract, right?
I would say that they overlap, but they're not one-to-one.
Like, okay.
There are certain things, for example, underage drinking is clearly within the social contract. Like, that's acceptable. Admonished, but acceptable, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the group you're in. But well, that's where social contract theory gets weird.
When we originally had talked about it, I was talking about someone making a cheating joke.
Yeah.
Saying that cheating at games is a violation of the social contract. Well, where you're like, you shouldn't be cheating. Unless it's, like, really funny.
I think the other trick is that the concept of the social contract is that it's not really... I mean, some people would want it to be, like, absolute, but it's not. It really can't be. So the social contract at any given time is kind of a misnomer.
Yeah.
It's more like our current existing contextualized social contract, social contract is the sort of ephemeral, at this time, this is the social contract.
And it's different for, like, so if Kendrick and I are hanging out, the social contract exists in a different way than if Kendrick and me and one of our bosses are hanging out, yeah. Right? Like, that's
different,
kind of interesting to me,
rules
too.
Apply.
It kind of embodies this thing that is constantly changing. That's a good point. So people are like, you sit at work, and we've talked about, you know, sitting at work and thinking about terrible things. Like,
yeah.
Like, what would be the first person I'd kill if everybody was zombies?
Right, right. How,
like,
would you use,
like, that.
Office supplies to defend yourself?
The social contract doesn't necessarily say don't do that. It says be aware of who's around you when you do that. And that's kind of where you can get into that area of, like, you can be a completely, like, indifferent kind of jerky person. Not jerky person, but you can be like us.
Insensitive.
Insensitive. Until the social contract is pounding on your head to tell you, like, don't do that right now. Like,
baby joke.
Yeah, it's like, sometimes the social contract is like, meh, okay. And the other times it's
don't
like,
make a dead
if
baby
you do
joke
this,
because so-and-so just had a baby.
I like the idea, like, of the social contract being a living thing around you,
I mean,
that's just constantly
is, yeah.
telling you, like, don't.
It kind of is. I mean, there's been lots of writing since those original ones, but I honestly don't respect them all, any of them.
Because they're the robots.
20th century philosophy and on is where it starts to go off the rails for me, and I start losing it.
It's like quantum physics, because you're like, sure.
And for me, it's mostly like the thoughts start to get so nuanced and hair-splitty that there's no great things to talk about anymore. It's just sociology and bullshit.
I never thought I would hear you say that, but that's interesting to hear.
Well, it's just like, I don't know, once you get past Sartre and like the post-humanist kind of stuff, it's like, well, the only stuff that's interesting coming out of the modern, not modern, but like the philosophical, and I guess when I say philosophical, I'm also talking about social theory and psychology and those kinds of things.
So just like every soft science all rolled into one little
ball. Not necessarily every
cheese.
One of them, but like some of the social contract theory drifts towards sociology because it's got socialism in
it. Yeah,
social,
no, that
social, I'm just trained to say that word apparently. It's got the social thing in it, so they're drifting into that sort of area, and I have zero interest in modern social theory because it seems like it's becoming way too politicized. But there is some neat stuff in the secular post-humanist world and in the technological post-humanist world, like the stuff that Anthony McCauley does. He's the stuff he's writing and the stuff he's in, that world is quite interesting, but also kind of relegated, not super popular.
You should toss a link to his most recent published edition.
I got to catch up on his works, actually.
Yeah,
because
I never got a chance to read any of his stuff, but
I have his books.
Anthony McCauley's class is the one that made me think about, like, things like, what's the philosophy of, like, Warhammer 40K? Like, when we're talking about, like, humans differentiating themselves with and from technology and how we utilize technology as an extension of ourselves, but we also then put efficacy into it by blaming it for things, and when in reality it's just us failing.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
And that's actually, Kyle and I both took classes through that, and that's where I got my minor, because he gave me a grade, not the best grade in the world, for that first philosophy class I took on a lark, and I took that as a challenge to go ahead and fucking get the major, or the minor. And then he later on revealed to me that he did that intentionally to fuck with me, and it's like, you son of a bitch.
I would have liked to have gotten a minor, but I don't know that I...
No, you were...
I didn't have time, but I don't know that I would have been able to finish, because I never... I don't know. I can't give myself that little credit, but I also don't want to, like, say, like, I could have totally done it. I would have liked to challenge myself to try a philosophy minor, but
I did because I needed something to fill the time, I think, mostly. And it was a challenge. It was absolutely a challenge. Philosophical thinking was not... It was something I enjoyed, but I wasn't necessarily great at. And so I had to work at it.
It's nice to push yourself past the, like, what we colloquially refer to as the freshman philosopher. Yes. Where you're like, you just learn about like the Socratic methodologies of thinking and,
yeah,
like,
and you think,
challenging things, and you're just kind of
do a bong rip.
What you just said, like hair splitter, you're kind of like a hair splitter.
Yeah.
You're kind of a antagonistic philosopher. So,
but there are some fun stuff, like the posthumanist stuff that's been coming out, but talks about like drawing the line between humanity and technology and where we're all cyborgs. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone who has fillings or any, you know, amalgam of stuff permanently installed in their body is definitionally a cyborg.
Yeah, because you're integrating technology with your physical, biological body.
And so anybody...
I mean, are pacemakers?
Yeah, pacemakers are like an obvious one, but like fillings in your teeth are artificially attached things to overcome a shortcoming in your body, right?
Yeah.
So there's like even that, and then there's more and more stuff we're doing, and the technology we're looking at, we're looking at that stuff, not batting an eye at it. Like, oh, of course I get a robot heart if I lost my heart. Oh, of course I get a robot spleen if I lost my spleen. And people keep going on the line, and then there's some people that are actually doing some fun thinking, which is not just, you know, Wizard of Oz, but it's like, well, at what point are you not human anymore?
Yeah, or is it defined by, like, how is it defined?
Yeah, where's
the line? We have to change the definition of what it means to be human.
Yeah, and it's...
That's kind of cool.
The fun part is we don't have to do shit. We do whatever we want, because who cares? But it's fun to play that world.
And it lets you think about the things that you already like to read and do in a very interesting way. Like, even you can even take some fantasy and think about, like, how much magic does it take for you to become not a human anymore? Yeah. Like, is magic an extension of self? And how
media,
does that affect...
Media plays with this sometimes, too. I mean, Wizard of Oz, fine example, right? The story of the Tin Man. I don't know if anyone actually knows the original story. I mean, people must.
Oh, they just, like, chopped up a guy and put him in, like, a tin,
well,
right?
So, the Tin Man was cursed. The woodsman was cursed by the Wicked Witch of the East, if I remember correctly. And she cursed him with something. And it was some whatever bizarre-ass magic curse. And what he did was, to escape the curse, because it cursed his body, he chopped his leg off and replaced it with a tin leg. He chopped his other leg off, replaced it with a tin leg. He chopped his arm off, replaced that with a tin arm. Chopped his arm off, replaced the other arm, replaced with a tin arm. Chopped his head off, replaced it with a tin head. And then chopped his body up and replaced it with tin pieces as he went.
Oh, really?
Until he was completely made out of tin.
I was kidding. That's kind of cool, though.
No, that's if I remember correctly, that's the actual original story.
And what was he cursed with? I'm sorry.
The Wicked Witch of the West cursed him with something. I think it was like that... cursed his body so that he would kill his family or some fucked up thing like that.
Okay.
The original Wizard of Oz is fucked up.
Well, actually, that's funny because the movie Return to Oz is kind of fucking weird.
And Return to Oz is more like the actual tone of the original book.
Yeah, and you watch it as a kid and you're like...
I'm scarred.
If you were freaked out by the flying monkeys and like some of the weird stuff from Wizard of Oz...
Yeah, and those roller guys.
You get really fucked up by, yeah, what happens in Return to Oz. Like the roller dudes and like living furniture and... The heads, the lady with the ribbon who's keeping the head on her body, and like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool, but not as a child.
It's kind of unsettling.
Yeah, but it's cool. I've
book
watched
is too.
It. I've never heard it.
Yeah, Return to Oz is good. But that was the concept, it was one of the things where the media, he was toying, was toying with some of the concepts of humanity. Like, what does it mean to be human? He replaced all of his parts. So is he still human?
Well, and it kind of made me think that all of the characters from Oz are a reflection on different types of...
What I mean, sure that you could dig deep into Wizard of Oz.
Well, yeah, like Scarecrow, like he acts human and he has human tendencies.
Well,
but like, what differentiates like a homunculus from being an actual human? Right,
right, and it's some fun stuff.
And homunculi are like I don't know how to best define them. They're things that are basically have been given life, but they're not truly.
They're human shaped.
Yeah.
Living balls of flesh.
Traditionally, but like a homunculi in like more popular media can be anything that is like that represent like physically looks human but is
usually it's not all flesh.
Yeah.
But if it's not made out of other stuff,
well,
it's
originally it was like Judaism, right? Like homunculi and golems and stuff like that were all kind
of... I don't know if homunculi, I think that's...
Well, golems anyway.
Golems
are the flesh given life.
Jewish. Well, it's not just flesh.
They're Jewish?
The golem is the animated like statue creatures,
yeah,
and stuff,
okay,
from Judaism. I think. I forget. But I know that golems are Jewish. And that's the one where you write down the instructions, you put it in their mouth.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And then they do whatever that instruction was.
Mm-hmm. And then the lion is kind of like an anthropomorphized creature. Like, what's the difference? Where do you draw the line between living, humanity, or animal?
Yeah,
like,
you can dig deep in that.
That's kind of cool.
But, yeah, no, that's part of that.
Which is interesting
world.
Because if you look at that and you look at, you know, like, sci-fi, like cyborgs and G-mods and all this kind of stuff that I like from the world I play in Netrunner all the time, where, you know, technology is so far advanced that it's just off the rails. Like, imagine the social contract in those situations. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, when you have a clone, if it was me and you and me and you and a clone and me and a clone, how does the social contract differ between...
What's the value of life when you can duplicate it?
Yeah, or even, like, yeah. What is your justification for changing the social contract when it's just a clone of yourself? Or, like,
who gets to make that call?
Yeah, and then who's the real Kyle, or who's the real Kendrick?
I like that's another philosophical quandary, which is, if you could make a perfect clone in exactly every single way, an identical copy of yourself, mm-hmm. how would you know which one would be the real you?
Then you get into all the experiential stuff, yep. Like, if they haven't actually experienced the life that you have, are they actually you?
They have the exact same experiences as you.
Yeah.
And it's like this philosophical thing is, like, where is the you? My favorite part about that is there's a comic that SNBC that makes fun of that. And it's like, the reason the engineers aren't allowed in the philosophy department anymore. So how can you tell which one's the real you? First one? Well, how do you know? Looking. It's like, it's a mystery. Not really.
Even, like, differences between, like, at the moment you realize that one of them, that you're both a clone, then you're no longer the same. Like, or something like that, where as soon as you've envisioned the world from a different perspective, even if that means a physical perspective, you're no longer the same entity.
Sure, like, and that's precisely where the philosophical stuff starts getting interesting, because it's like, well, then are you the sum of your experiences?
And it makes me think of that awesome Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that nobody remembers called The Sixth Day, where, like, he goes to get, like, a doll for his daughter.
That's impressive. I don't remember that.
Like, so the whole movie's based around, I don't remember the company, but he works as a helicopter pilot, and he... gets this doll for his daughter that's, like, one of these, like, living, like, human replica dolls, right? And they're, like, really, really creepy and really real and, like, definitely put in a position to be in the Uncanny Valley on purpose. Mm-hmm. And then you start realizing that it's kind of like a Total Recall reboot with a little change, because you realize that he might, like, he gets knocked out or falls asleep at some point and realizes that he might have been taken over, because he's now being accused of going to do something that he didn't do, like kill a presidential candidate or a senator or something. And he's like, but I was just getting this doll, but I went to the store before. And then you have to go into the intrigue of, like, who's real and was I the robot the whole time?
Or,
like,
I've been the doll all along.
It's actually kind of cool.
I'll
but
check that out.
It's
the sixth day.
Yeah, it's kind of a play
when you tag
on
that.
Play on, you know,
God.
Yeah. That whole
that old God fellow,
God guy thing. So,
but what was that right before that thing?
Philosophy and dupes engineering and.
But no, it was the humanity, right? And that's one of the things is if you could download your brain into a computer, is it human?
If you can download your brain into a computer as a human, that's actually a cool concept. Because what happens if you download your brain to a computer and then put it into another human?
And that's actually where part of the fun stuff is. You like you just said, well, if you start having different experiences, then you become a different identity, right? Because you've got two exact clones, but they start differing in their experiences, which they would right after the clone point, right?
Sure. As soon as, like, yeah.
Then you're tacitly suggesting that, or implying anyway, that...
I don't tacitly do anything.
Then you're tacitly...
Oh, okay. I do stuff with tassels.
Yeah, you're pro-tassel.
I'm a pro-tasselist.
Tessellating. Tessellating tassels. Tacitly. It's that the theory that you are the sum of your experiences, which I think is a human concept.
At first I thought you mispronounced human, and I was like, Kendrick, you can do this. It's not that early.
Jormungandr.
It's a theory made up by a giant snake holding the world together.
Yeah. Or eating the world, who knows? But anyway, this is the trick is, if you are the sum of your experiences and that defines your identity, and you sustain a head injury and you start forgetting part of your experiences, does that change your identity?
Well, movies like Memento and things like that imply a hard yes, because you don't even remember who you are half the time, and you can't remember what you did, so. Are you really to blame for the things you do if you can't remember them and
legally,
you don't know them?
Yes.
Like, legally, I know. Philosophically? Yeah. Because your physical body determines legality or something, where if your hand murdered a man even though you don't know you did it, you're either insane or to blame.
Which is mostly, you know, it's just easier.
You're right. It's really hard to make a case.
Because it starts to get really crunchy really fast as far as what that means.
Well, that's
kind of
cool
because
it goes into, like, that Final Cut thing. Like, what if you didn't have to die for that to happen, right? They could review your stuff. they saw you did it, but they could actually review your memory too. And then it's like you physically killed the person, but your memory has no, they like mapped your mind, so your memory had no record of it. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting, because I wonder how PTSD stuff would happen. You know, people who have
stop sign, right?
Yes, people who have, you know, like blocked out bad experiences. How does that work? And you can understand how, you know, that whole functionality works and blah, blah, blah.
Fascinating shit. Well, we got a little philosophy heavy today on the stream of consciousness in which we spit.
I was just spitting Kendrick's car, actually.
It's not a stream. That's just a Lexus part right here, so you can get out without stepping in snow.
Thanks. Thanks, buddy. So, well,
That's that. Hopefully your recording did well, because mine was probably pointed at my butt the whole time.
Good. Well, we'll see. If we did, I would hate to rehash that, so I hope we got it.
Well, one of them got it.
Thanks for listening today, folks. We'll see you later.
Sitzok out. Kendrick, Kyle out. This one's done. Hopefully the other... Wait, no, the other one's still going.
No!